You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
ESO, 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Hey, you guys!
How exciting! Spoilers!
Come!
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye!
The Earth Station One Podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
The Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted no transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up! Which one of those chess buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here. Right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi, from a certain point of view. Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, and for today's podcast, I'm going to be kind of doing my own little version of the Empire's podcast, in which I'll be talking to the director of Please Stand By, as well as give my review after our interview. So, yay for that. I'm actually kind of excited because while I've done other interviews, like with authors and illustrators and comic book writers, this is actually my first movie director, so I'm really kind of excited about that. So, last week, I got to talk to Ben briefly, and we had a good conversation, so I hope you enjoyed that. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ben Lewin.
Hi, Montgomery.
Hi, Ben. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm sorry I'm running a bit late.
It's okay. I appreciate your time for this. I really thank you for that. So considering how we're short on time, I just want to kind of say, I really enjoyed this movie. I had a great time with this.
Thank you so much. Good.
So what really attracted you to this project?
For me, every good story is some unusual person on a journey. This was so different. I connected with it on one level because I thought, the character is, I know someone like that. I know more than one. It was familiar. And what particularly attracted me to it was that people with autism usually represented in male characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Rain Man, the, you know, atypical, the good doctor. It's kind of like so much associated with men and boys that I thought, this really does put a different light on it, and I think it sort of emphasized the need that women with autism have for emotional connection.
Exactly, because then, like the other sister is probably one of a small handful of women leads that happen to have autism, but everything else is all male.
Yes, it's about one to four the ratio.
Wow.
But you know, I mean, honestly, once I went out into the community and started meeting people with autism, there were lots of women, and you really did appreciate the difference. So I think that's one of the things that definitely attracted me to it, that it was going into, you know, new ground, new territory. And that whole connection with Star Trek, I didn't know about it before. It was a total learning experience. You know, I called the mother of a young woman with autism that I knew. I said, the Star Trek thing. Oh, yes, yes, of course. You know, the simple morality, the sense that it was everyone else that was an alien, not us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that thing about, you know, Mr. Spock is, in a way, the original autistic hero.
I see that.
And all that was kind of, new. It gave the movie, for me, a kind of a real uplift. It took it away from a kind of the, you know, bleeding heart sort of end of the scale. I really felt that it was both a serious and a happy story.
Now, it was interesting because Connie did play a movie with Sean Penn in 2001, I Am Sam, who was also playing, the father wants to be autistic. But I'm just curious, what did she go out to the community like you did to research her part?
In both of our cases, the script was the essential blueprint for playing the character. Of course, she went out into the community, and we both connected with a number of people. And I don't think that was necessarily, you know, a learning experience by way of, oh, that's what autism is about. I think what it showed was that the spectrum was vast, that there was no commonality, that it was pointless to try and find, you know, a standard way of representing autism. It just didn't exist. And I think that what it gave both Dakota and I was a greater sensitivity and just an instinctive connection. Just by being with people rather than trying to figure it all out.
Right. Now, well, I was going to ask you, on that note, was any kind of worry about or a pushback that you have someone who is an actor or actress who is non-artistic playing someone who is?
Well, I think that actors have been playing people who they aren't. You know, ever since the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, have they? So I think that there's a general acceptance that that's what acting is about.
Right.
At the same time, everyone in that house that she lived in was someone with autism or, you know, a developmental challenge. So they were real people. And I felt that was important because you can't, you know, expect an extra to, you know, take on a personality that is not theirs. There we needed real people. And I think, you know, as I discovered in an earlier movie, much as you might want to have the genuine person doing the role, if you have, in the case of the Sessions, it was someone with polio, in this case, ultimately, you're looking for the best representation of the part.
Right.
And I think even, you know, people with autism want that as well. And no one ever offered any criticism of the fact that we used an actor. It's a practical process as well. If I would have found someone on the spectrum who could have done the part, maybe I would have used them. I don't know. It's just that once I met with Dakota and realized how much she identified with the role, it was irresistible. Right.
Oh, that's excellent. Now, of course, being a Star Trek fan myself, I have to ask who, even if it's you, who was the biggest Star Trek fan on that set?
Who was the biggest Star Trek fan? It was the writer, Michael Galanko.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as much of a Star Trek fanatic as I've met, but I became one. I mean, I really, you know, went into it head first. Are you a Trekker?
Oh, and that's the other thing. There's a difference. It's like a Trekkie versus a Trekker. So it's a whole different kind of force of two different groups that love the exact same thing. And I'm telling you, fandom, like for me, I can be so nitpicky about things as Star Trek Discovery because of the new series. But, you know, I've been a big fan all my life. And I so identified with Wendy because I also submitted a script to Star Trek DS9 when it was on the air. So I really enjoyed that process. So I felt like I kinship with her.
Oh, great. And you recognize the costumes from the Tholian web?
Yeah. And what I loved about that is that it paid homage to the original Trek. So I thank you for that.
No. Well, that was I did kind of binge watch all the original ones and said, that's what we're going to follow. Well, that's what Wendy's going to call it.
Right. Now, the other thing, too, that I found a kind of a connection was that Wendy has a daily pattern of things that are set. And I was wondering is that her connection to Star Trek was that because there's a beginning, middle, and end, and it's always the exact same episode. I'm wondering if there was a correlation between the two.
Between her daily routine and her connection
to Star Trek. Watching Star Trek, yeah.
I mean, we didn't strain to create one.
Right.
If it seems that way, that's so. I guess that the Star Trek connections I see more in the nature of, you know, the simple morality that Star Trek espouses. That sense that everyone else is an alien.
Right.
And that. What seems to be obvious that Mr. Spock is like one of the first autistic heroes on television. You know, much richer in personality, I would have thought, than Rain Man. I didn't really look for a connection between the routines that people on the spectrum need to, you know, to kind of shut out the chaos in the but it is true that a lot of people with autism develop these kind of passionate special interests like Star Trek, so that was not necessarily part of her daily routine as part of her DNA.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is because when she goes on this journey, she doesn't have that daily routine anymore. So it's kind of interesting that she's able to still overcome all these different challenges. That I'm wondering if it was kind of restrictive being in that home, or was it more like it was kind of setting her up so that she can overcome those things in the future?
Well, I think that, you know, people with autism grow and develop and change like any other person, and I think this was the point that I think we were trying to make, that that her journey was not something unique to people with autism, but many people could identify with a sense of needing to cross Market Street, if you like.
Right.
So I hope that goes beyond just the sort of the sense of, you know, escaping a special needs environment.
Right.
I think that, you know, a lot of people have, you know, a Market Street in their lives, which they think they'll never be able to cross.
All right, so that was my conversation with Ben, and I really wish I had more time to talk to him about this because I really want to kind of pick his brains. But many, many thanks to Ben for his time, and especially to Tina over at Ginsburg Libby, who helped set up the interview. So again, thank you very much for the both of them. So as far as my review, I'm not going to give you too much in a way of spoilers, but I really do want to tell you how much I really liked this movie. So there is no BS behind me legitimately liking this movie. It is wonderful, and it's a nice little movie that every once in a while you need to have a movie like this, kind of like a movie sorbet between, you know, the big blockbuster movies that are out there with superheroes and sci-fi movies. So this is kind of, it felt good to do this, to watch this movie. And the reason why I even was interested in the first place, right from the very beginning when I saw the trailer and I noticed that there was a Star Trek tie-in to the movie in which Wendy, who is the lead in this movie, is writing a Star Trek script for a competition. And that's what drew me in, is that I also wrote a spec script for, at that time, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So I was really kind of excited to see how this would all turn out. So for Wendy, the whole point was that because she lives in a home and she is trying to live outside of that home with her sister, which is played by Alice Eve, the time to get her script in had passed because the two of them argued and she had an episode in which she kind of shut down. So after she realizes that it's Sunday and the post office is going to be closed on a Monday and the competition ends on Tuesday, that's when she sets off on this quest to basically deliver her script in person to Paramount. The other barrier, aside from the fact that she's doing this all by herself, is that while outside the home, she does have a regular job in a mall working at Cinnabon. There's a street called Market Street that she just cannot go past. She's told this is where basically you don't go any further. You have a routine, you go back and forth between the home and work, and that's it. So for her to overcome this, and again, Ben briefly talked about this, about the Market Street, is that sometimes there are barriers, whether it's physical or mental, that we put up or things are put up in front of us in order for us to go forward and fulfill whatever that is that we want to achieve. So it's amazing how the fact that Wendy, who's autistic, is able to achieve this, whereas many people probably in a similar situation will never go that far or even go past the point of their comfort level. So what I liked about that is that after a while, it's like I didn't see Wendy as being autistic. And that was kind of refreshing. It's just a woman who's never experienced the outside world. Kind of reminded me of my own daughter who is now turned 17. And she's starting to look at the world a much bigger place and wants to explore. And I'm kind of freaking out about that. So, but with Wendy, that's her first time. And she manages to really do well. Again, even with someone who has autism, that's an amazing journey. So even, again, doesn't have a whole lot of Star Trek references in there. It's enough to make me happy, but I was more happy about her able to complete her way through the world that she's never known before. So that's amazing. I really was happy about that because, as I also mentioned to Ben, was that we've seen before many male actors playing autistic characters, but they're always male, and we really don't get too many females doing a lead like this. So I'm really ecstatic that this was done in a very caring way and very respectful way. So again, credit to Dakota and to Ben for really portraying a great character. A couple other moments that I did like, although it was kind of short, Patton Oswalt was in there. he was able to speak Klingon with Wendy, but that was basically in the trailer, so there wasn't much of a surprise. So that was the only negative that I would have to say about that. But the one moment that I really liked a lot, Toni Collette plays Scotty, who is the one who runs the home and basically is a caregiver to Wendy. And of course, as Wendy goes missing, she gets in a car with her son, who tries to find her along the way. But Wendy has given a copy of the script to Scotty to read. And she's talking to her son about the script. And she's saying, you know, I know Spock is like, you know, the hero of Star Wars. And the son is just like cringing because it's like she's getting it all wrong. And I so understand that, because there are times in which my mom, like this past Christmas, gave us a Christmas present for, like, she wrote, like, the Trek family, where she trying to make it, like, the Star Trek family little tag. So I opened up the gift, and it was a package of Pez dispensers, but from Star Wars, so she never really made the connection. I'm like, I'm not going to be critical of my mom in that respect, but I understood that she still loved me enough to still do this. But I understand how her son felt, because if it was anyone else, I would just like, you're hurting me, like you're raking your nails across a chalkboard, that kind of thing. Don't cross the streams, basically. So other than that, I really enjoy the fact that in the process, there's little tidbits of information about the script that Wendy wrote for her Star Trek screenplay. You know, at one point she does say that Spock goes to DS9 to recruit Worf for battle. And I'm like, that sounds like an awesome script. And I would love to have seen that happen. So my thing is that it's obvious that she's a Star Trek fan. So I'm wondering, what would her thoughts be about Star Trek Discovery? Would she love it, or would she hate it like I do? I don't know. But that's one of those things you just leave it up for fan fiction. But again, it's a nice little movie that you should watch. So if you find it in your theater, great. If not, you can always watch it online through Amazon or iTunes. On that note, I'm going to end my podcast. So if you have any questions, you have any concerns or comments, if you've seen, please stand by. Let me know. Email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. You can follow me on the various social networks. Again, thank you very much for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.